in January 2014, 18 of us spent 8 days in Cuba. We had a medical, we had a guide from Cuba, we had an interpreter, and we also had a medic guide with us. Medic is medical education, medical cooperation with Cuba, and they facilitate understanding about Cuba for U.S. people. So I'm really unprepared, no pictures, no slides. But what did we do? We visited, of course, the healthcare system, and we learned about the pyramidal healthcare system, including the doctor-nurse pairs that live in communities and take care of about 3 or 4 square blocks of communities and usually are available in a community clinic in the morning and then do home visits in the afternoons. They have risk stratification of all of their patients. They have a census of all of their patients. And so they have very detailed data about what's going on in their neighborhoods. And then there's people, if they have more needs, go to polyclinics and then up to the hospitals and the like. We visited schools. We visited the medical school there, on and on and on. What I'm going to tell you is what I learned. I'm going to say 7 things I learned. And then the first thing I learned is how close Cuba is to the United States. Right? And how big Cuba is. And how isolated it is from the United States. And yet how so many other countries have tourists and all there all the time. I learned that what we call the embargo is experienced there as the blockade. And there were billboards, so there are no billboards there advertising products. There are billboards there advertising solidarity and themes, you know, and things to live for. And I wish, I don't know if any of us took a picture of one billboard that said El Bloqueo, and it had a noose around the map of Cuba and how El Bloqueo, the blockade, kills. I learned that there's a lot of history that we don't know. And that we can, that for Americans, and especially for APHA, if we want to become the healthiest nation in a generation, there's a lot that we need to learn by traveling to other countries, including Cuba, which is so close and yet so far away. I learned, because I have an interest in race and racism, that it's complex. Even in a place like Cuba, which is completely devoted to equity, of opportunity and the like, but you have the legacy because of who was imported there as workers in the past and who wasn't. You still have a visual legacy of racial stratification. And even when we visited the schools and the children would put on plays for us, and I had the impression that there were schools that were always visited by American tour groups, because they were very well prepared to always, and I think that maybe a lot of their education was putting on plays and things for kids, I mean for Americans. But even when they put on a play about the story La Muñeca, which is about a little doll that was abandoned by the girl because she was black and all, but even when they put on this play, the one little black girl who was there was so pretty was forced to be the ugly doll. So in a way, they were talking about a play about how the girl eventually embraces the doll and loves her even though she's black. That's the moral of the story. But the implementation of the story was that this young, beautiful, dark-skinned girl was always going to be the ugly doll when we were doing this story for Americans. And why couldn't they take another towel and let her be the ugly doll? Okay. I also learned, in terms, because I have special eyes and ears and feelings for race and racism, we had the opportunity to have a very interesting conversation with what I call like the old guard. You know, like if you were talking to the 50, 60, 70-year-old old guard in terms of talking about issues of race and racism, these were men of brown-skinned men who were the intellectuals of the revolution. And they were, you know, waxing eloquently about how, yes, you know, Cuba was dedicated to being anti-racist, but there was racism and how policies were implemented and blah, 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 blah. And so I said, well, you know, what does Cuba do with regard to the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination? This is an international anti-racism treaty that was voted into being into 1965. I said, has Cuba, you know, signed this? And, you know, what are the... And they got very... All of a sudden, things changed. Do you guys remember this? All of a sudden, things changed, and all of a sudden, but they said, oh yes, those people, you know, at ICER, you know, they keep saying that Cuba's racist, and how could they ever accuse racism, you know, Cuba of having racism in, and you know, there's no racism in Cuba. And from going a second ago about talking about the racism in Cuba, they were completely defensive. And I didn't know if that was because we were now talking about their homeland, Cuba, and they were part of the revolution type of thing, or if it was also that they couldn't talk, that all of a sudden they were aware they shouldn't be talking about flaws in the Cuban system. I didn't know. I see that I have 5 minutes left. I want to say my other lessons, and I want to invite Mia Ramirez, Portia Collins, and Danielle Campbell to say one thing else that they learned. I learned that using arts in communities can be community building. And we saw several examples of that. And so there was a lot of, you know, things sort of got frozen in time after the revolution in 1959. You know, the cars, you see all of the old cars, and you may see pictures of beautiful, well-preserved cars from the 1950s. In Cuba, you see all the buildings, many of them are crumbling, but now with some of the money coming outside of the blockade, there's investment in some other buildings. But you had this sense that there was a lot of dilapidation, but people still trying to be strong, but community arts was transforming many communities and engaging people in powerful things. I learned that the medical school there, ELAM, Escuela Latinoamericana de Medicina, the Latin American Medical School, which was established in 1998, has 10,000 students from all over the world, including many students, maybe up to 100 from the U.S. We only went to one of their campuses, but this is an amazing resource that Cuba is providing for the world, not just Latin America, but African countries and Asian countries and North America, the U.S. I learned that if you value your pregnant mothers, then you can have excellent health outcomes, as Cuba has, despite the poverty. And there was a very interesting, they have maternal homes where women who are judged to be high risk are actually segregated a little bit. It was a little disturbing. It was almost like hospitalized, and they were sitting there in their beds, and they were maybe making crafts and stuff like that. And the families could visit, but that they have really low infant mortality and probably maternal mortality because they value their pregnant women. And they also value education, and so they have a highly educated populace, even though it's poor. And so I'd like to invite you guys to come up. We have a few more minutes at each. Say one thing that you learned, and then I have a closing statement.
Good morning. My name is Portia Collins, and as Dr. Jones mentioned, I was also on the trip with Medic this year to Cuba. One of the things that I took away from our trip was really the people, the resiliency of the people, them being a developing country. They had a lot of passion and a lot of really good thoughts about their country. They didn't see themselves as, you know, they did talk about the blockade against what the U.S. has against them, but they have been able to do so much with such little resources to have this well-integrated, very integrated actual health system, something that we're trying to accomplish here in the United States, and just to see that they've been able to accomplish so much since the revolution, to bring all of that together, the importance they put on their mothers, the importance they put on their education, the importance they put on their children and making sure that they have all the information that they need to be great people was really something that I took away from this because it completely changed my view of what I thought Cuba would be like or what I thought the people would be like going there. So that's one of my biggest takeaways.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Dr. Jones. My name is Mia Ramirez. I was also on the trip. And I guess one of the things I was most surprised to learn was there essentially is a two-tiered economy. There's a dual currency. There's one currency for tourists and U.S. visitors. There's another currency for the Cuban population. And there's incredible disparity about what resources you can access with what given currency. At one maternity home visit, I had the opportunity to speak with the lead obstetrician over the entire facility, who told me that he was making about $32 U.S. a month serving in this very high-level role. and that he was moonlighting in the tourist area as a cab driver, and he would earn more in one night driving quote-unquote drunk tourists than he did his entire month trying to improve maternal health and child health outcomes as a physician. Another stark disparity for me that came at the forefront with this two-tiered economy and essentially culture was when we went to stay at a resort. So our group was staying at a Cuban resort, and there was poor lighting. The electricity was in and out. The food, and we were right next door to a huge Spanish resort, Barceló Resorts, which was targeted for tourists, and it was a five-star resort that you would see, Dominican Republic, etc. So, again, just that two-tiered system, perpetually in your face, in your currency, in dealing with the doctors, and it became very uncomfortable for me just to see that and live it and talk to the people that were also dealing with the consequences of that two-tiered system. So thank you.
Thank you all. And in the interest of time, I'll just talk about a few brief things that I brought home. So I went to Cuba with the interest of learning about how they address the epidemic of HIV and AIDS. Cuba has like amazingly low rates, and so I wanted to go there and pick up some tools that I could take back to the U.S. My community is facing an epidemic that is largely amongst young black men who have sex with men. And so I learned about how the centralization of their healthcare system and then the risk assessment, the continuous risk assessment, the doctor-nurse teams, and how the strategies that they employ on their day-to-day is really the secret to their keeping their rates so low and their community so healthy. It's just, it was mind-blowing, but an amazing experience with these amazing women nonetheless.
And if I might just close, I would say that you can see that trips like this, educational opportunities that APHA offers like this, not just to Cuba but to everywhere, can be mind-expanding things. And so actually, as APHA president-elect, I'm going to encourage us to create learning opportunities for APHA members to travel all over the world. Because if we really want to be the healthiest nation in one generation, we need to open our eyes and learn what other people are doing. So thank you very much.